Hi, and welcome to The Civ. I'm Karen Anderson, and this is the podcast where we slow down, lean in, and have honest conversations about the core values that shape our lives, our work, and all the decisions we make along the way. Each week, I'll be joined by fascinating guests from all walks of life, artists, entrepreneurs, storytellers, and everyday folk, to explore what matters most to them, how they stay true to themselves and make decisions that feel good when life gets messy. So wherever you are, thank you for listening. I hope this conversation leaves you inspired, a little curious, and maybe even with a new perspective to take into your own life. Let's get into it. Thank you so much for being on The Civ. You're our second ever guest. So I met you last year, and immediately I was drawn to how warm and authentic that you were. And so when I was pulling up my list of people that I wanted to chat to on this podcast, all about core values and what motivates us and guides us and stuff, you were part of that. And I think your story is one that's really interesting and unique, and one that I think people will really like. So thank you.
Well, thanks for having me on. Yeah, I'm super excited.
Let's start really easy then. So anybody who might be listening who doesn't know who are you? What do you do?
Yeah, so my name's Sam Kelly. I'm a musician professionally, I suppose, now, which it still feels weird to say that. But I'm a folk musician, like singer and multi-instrumentalist, and I produce music as well. So I've got my own little home studio. But I've also got a few things, a few other random hobbies that have kind of become woven into the music for me as well. One of which is the sort of nature and foraging type stuff, which I've always had as a hobby. But recently I've realized that a lot of music festivals that are in good natural spaces, and, you know, a lot of people who are into folk music have that kind of link with place and nature and things like that. So there's been a bit of a common thread. So I've started doing all these sort of wild food and plant identifying walks at festivals as well. So it's cool that that's become a thing. But yeah, I suppose those are sort of the main things in my life at the moment.
Love that. I think that's it. All that kind of foraging and nature and stuff has become such a massive part of your brand, hasn't it? And I think that's part of what stands you apart from maybe a lot of your contemporaries. Why do you do what you do, Sam?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think I have always done music. Music has always been a massive part of my life, my psyche. It's been something that I've found easy and comforting throughout my whole life. It's always been a safe space for me that started from a young age. Because I had the link with my grandfather, who it was very much something that I did with granddad, you know. He was Irish and had a beautiful singing voice, and it kind of, that link through music opened up a tender and vulnerable side of myself that I probably wouldn't have otherwise had much access to as a kid, which I now realize was super helpful in terms of me being able to shield from things like toxic masculinity and not being able to be emotionally present and emotionally self-analytical, I guess, and just being comfortable being in an emotional space as a man, I suppose. So it kind of started as a comfort thing there, but I think it then just, I would be doing it anyway if I wasn't doing it as a job, which I'm very fortunate to do now, obviously, but I think it was the thing that I was best at in my life. All through school, I had a few things that I was good at and that I was interested in, but music was the only thing that I excelled at, I suppose. So I gravitated to it more because of that, as a lot of musicians do, I think. And then made the big decision, you know, when I'd finished my A-levels and was choosing between music and a few other things to do at university, just went for music and went to a music college where I learned how to, okay, you know, you can do this as a job. He's all the tools you could access and create to do it. And it just went from there. I've just never looked back, really. I've had enough terrible jobs to super appreciate every single opportunity and gig I get. So I think that's, you know, I hopefully that answers why I'm still doing it.
I think that's it. So, like, talking about your granddad there, I think it's always interesting to look at the origin story. So music was a part of your life since you were young. What did, other than that musical influence, what did young life look like for young Sam Kelly?
Yes. I mean, I working class background, so it's, you know, never had a lot of money. And I had this thing in my head for a lot of my young adult life, I think, of thinking I had, you know, I had had an underprivileged childhood financially, and therefore, look at me, I'm amazing. I've managed to create a career in the creative industry. But what I didn't realize at that time, which I now realize and super appreciate, is I had the huge privilege of having supportive parents and a safe family unit. My parents were separated, but in an amicable and respectful way, didn't hugely affect my life, except it just had... My dad lived in a house and my mum lived in a separate flat, like, and that was what I was used to. But having that, just having a family unit that never tried to tell me what to do. They always let me follow my own path and supported it. Neither of my parents ever gave me any kind of jip for trying to do music, even though they did not and still probably don't understand it at all. Don't understand how I make a living from it, and that's fine, but they've just never made me feel stupid for doing it, or made me feel like I couldn't do it, which I now realize is a huge privilege. I went to a pretty normal city state school, played football and loved that, and I've got a good group of mates that I'm still friends with now that I went to school with, as you know, as well as the other side now of all the friends that I've made through music. So, I had a pretty uneventful working class kind of childhood, really, but with a very good family unit and totally won the dad lottery. I've got an amazing dad, which that's, you know, it's a point of difference with a lot of people that I know and a lot of guys that I know. I had an amazing dad who I was used to him doing cleaning and cooking and, being one of those sort of quiet feminists that really helped me in my development as a kid, I think, as well. So, yeah, that was pretty much it, I think.
That's perfect. So maybe one of the things that is extraordinary about your story is that you, at some point, decided to go and audition for Britain's Got Talent. Where did that come from? Whose idea was that?
Decided is a strong word. As a lot of things that have happened in my life, I'm a very spontaneous and whimsical person, which I think a lot of musicians are, a lot of creative people are. Planning has never been a strong suit of mine, but and with that, with Britain's Got Talent, I was in London for a gig. I had two gigs that were a day apart. I think it's like the Rocket Pub in Acton or something. And then, you know, there's small, very, very low-key gigs where I think we had like three people come and they were just people that we knew anyway. But had a day off in between where I was staying in near Wembley, which is... And then I just saw there was huge crowds near where I was staying and I just wondered what was going on. Then saw it was the Britain's Got Talent auditions, went online and you could book a last minute audition slot. So I was like, why don't I just do it? I've got a day off. See, you know, I was really interested in the process. I have no interest in reality TV at all. I don't really watch any TV in general at all, but particularly reality TV, I actively don't have an interest in, and never did. But just on a whim decided to sign up and see what the audition process was like, and then didn't think anything else of it. And then 4 or 5 months later, whenever it was, got a call from one of the producers saying they wanted to put me through to the TV audition thing where you audition in front of the big old famous judges. And then, yeah, ended up getting all the way through to the final. I think I was just like, I think that year they were, as with a lot of these things, it's just luck of what they want to program that year, really. But I think that year they were trying to get a lot of sort of cool young musicians as they saw it. Because I think they'd had a few years of bad ratings and they wanted to make it a bit more appealing to young people in the same way that X Factor was, maybe. And so on that year, there was just a lot of musicians. There was a lot of young musicians, of which I was one. And then we all got beaten by a dancing dog. So make of that what you will.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What was that process and journey like creatively for you? Because I can imagine, obviously, that's quite a departure from folk clubs and, you know, pubs and clubs.
Totally.
Well,
it was... At the time, I thought it was creatively just null and void, really. It was, for me, it was just like, you know, it was like being on TV. That is how I saw it. It served me well that I didn't care about the whole process, really, because I wasn't emotionally invested. I wasn't creatively invested in the same way that a lot of the people I met through the show were. And it was really kind of sad to see actually a lot of people resting all of their hopes and dreams on this thing, because for a lot of people, that's the only way you can make it creatively. If you know, have these industry bigwigs that you go in front of and they might decide to pluck you off a tree and make you a star. But I just never had that in my head. So at the time I was just like, it's not adding to my creativity. You know, it might give me some performance skills of performing in high octane environments and blah, blah, blah. But actually it really did, in hindsight, it really did help me creatively, because it gave me a bit more confidence in my own ideas, firstly, but creatively, I mean, but also, it gave me a clearer idea of what I really didn't want to do, both creatively and music career wise.
Yeah.
Because after the show, when it, you know, I'd signed with the big agency that had all the talent show products like One Direction, and you know, they had massive, massive worldwide artists at the time. Signed with them and Raw Global, who are a management company that, you know, the same, had all these the big talent show famous people on, and with the view of negotiating this one album deal with Simon Cowell's record label, of just doing pop covers, which is what I did on the show. I just was guy with guitar, played covers of pop songs, and yeah, it just that process, I had such bad feelings towards it. My gut feeling from the off with almost everybody, they're all lovely people, but just so not on a wavelength with what I wanted. I just had such bad vibes from the whole thing. And it gave me a clear idea. It was like, I know that this is what I want to do creatively. I want to write my own songs, but I also get such enjoyment from rearranging these old folk songs, playing folk tunes that give me this nostalgia factor, make me feel like I'm, you know, a little kid again, sitting in my granddad's living room, listening to these folk songs. That is what I want my music to be. And it doesn't matter if I make a career of it or not, because that's just what it is. That's what I want it to be. And that's what it always will be. So in a weird way, weird backhanded way, it did help me creatively in that it just gave me a much clearer idea of what I wanted, I think.
I love that. When I was doing my research for this conversation, I read that you were offered £1 million contract. Is that right?
I mean, it wasn't £1 million to me, but I think when they say £1 million contracts, they're talking about the total value of all of the costings of the deal. Whereas, like, you know, my advance money would be like 30 grand or something, which, you know, for a 19-year-old kid who's never had more than a grand in his bank account, that's a life-changing amount of money. And I already did get a life-changing amount of money from it by doing the tour afterwards. You know, for me, I got enough money to get my first home studio set up together, get my guitar, which is still my main guitar now. So it did change my life just through that, through playing like four gigs at Butlins. But yes, so it's you know, there's a modicum of truth in the £1 million record deal, but it doesn't really stack up that way, I guess.
But whether it's £1 million or £30,000, like you say, that's life changing for a young man. And for you to choose not to follow that path and go with your traditional roots, that's, I don't know how many young men would have made that choice. What was it in you that made you do that, do you think? Other than knowing, I guess, maybe what you've already said, you knew who you were and who you wanted to be.
Yeah, to be honest, I think it will. I mean, I was lucky that I had done a music publishing module at university, so I wasn't an idiot with contracts. And I think that's the scariest bit, is when you start dealing with signing your name on pieces of paper and these lengthy and scary contracts.
Yeah,
I not only had a bit of knowledge of that and what to look out for, but I also had a good base of contacts from university who I knew could help me look over stuff if I needed. So I had a few things in place that I think just gave me confidence. And I've always been a pretty confident person. You know, I've not had a load of stuff that's knocked me back in my life enough to lose confidence, I suppose. So I have always just had that quite, you know, headstrong side to myself, where I think I've just been privileged enough to be confident in that I can make right decisions for myself, and independent enough that I know what I think is best for me, and can trust that in a lot of situations, even if it's unfamiliar. So I think that just the fact that I had all these really bad gut feelings without necessarily having a really good, you know, articulatable reason to not do this. Mm-hmm. I had enough bad feelings about it initially and enough confidence to just trust that. And both of my parents, you know, talking to them each individually, who they'd supported me through the process in terms of just being like, oh, it's amazing that you're doing this, and, you know, we'll come and watch you, but what the heck is going on, kind of thing. Again, just trusting me to make my own decisions, not taken over. And both of them, and my dad was super helpful, was just like, I can't help you, but you need to just go with your gut feelings. Like, you know, it's, you have to trust what your gut feelings are telling you. And I think that's just helped me in a lot of situations in life. But with that, it was, yeah, it was literally just down to gut feeling and instinct, as well as, you know, some of the minutiae terms of the contract, which were like, we have the option of owning everything you ever create for the next 10 years or blah, 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 should we decide to. So, yeah.
So then you transitioned back to the folk world then, once you've left showbiz and pop stardom, or potential pop stardom. With folk music, I always think, with your music, Sam, obviously folk music is so rooted in tradition, and I guess that's it. And you're not doing the kind of high octane strobe light big, you know, in the modern folk music that it seems to be emerging from the scene. Your songs sound like they're totally based in tradition, but yet manage to sound fresh and modern at the same time. What's your creative process that allows that to be the result of it?
Yeah, I think partly it's just down to what I like, in a way. My favourite thing to listen to that my granddad used to sing were these heartfelt ballad type, you know, Irish folk songs that were rooted in beautiful love stories or stories of heartbreak, hardship, born of struggle, those kind of things. Those were what really moved me. And it was just to see him and then other people, you know, male and female singers. But obviously the male influence was a bit stronger with me because it was, I think it was the only space where I would see men being emotionally vulnerable. And it was such an incongruous, you know, kind of juxtaposition with what I was used to men and boys being like, I guess. So I think partly because of that, but also just partly naturally, I love, you know, beautiful stories and beautiful melodies. And I think then when I started discovering other singers, folk singers and more folk music in that way, those were just the types of things that appealed to me more. So I think that has just come across, you know, in how I create and what music I like to output as an adult, I guess. Having said that, you know, I'm a huge classic rock fan. I love like riff based guitar music. That's what got me playing guitar specifically in the first place. I started off as a drummer, but it was classic rock that made me want to pick up the guitar and learn these riffs. So I love the riff based guitar music as well. And, you know, I love this, you know, sort of high octane, modern kind of techno folk thing we've got going on, especially in the Scottish folk scene at the minute. There's some really cool stuff coming out. But yeah, I think I just kind of naturally gravitate towards the more tender side of things as well. And I think folk clubs as well, that kind of environment, these community organized gigs, like the gig we did with you last year in your local hall, the thing that I loved about that, which, you know, partly was the vibe that you created there, but a lot of those community organized gigs do have a similar vibe where it feels so intimate and candle lit, and it feels like there's so much space for people to just listen to stuff and relax. It's not like a, you know, big sticky floor club party type vibe. And I love those kind of things as well. So I think that has probably exacerbated that natural kind of draw for me, I suppose.
So when you, like, so you've just got this new record out. So when you sit down to write that, what does that creative flow look like for you? Is that something that you're actively pursuing and chasing, or do you have to wait for it to come to you? How does it work for you?
Yeah. It's a good question. It for me, it totally varies. A lot of the time they talk about, I can't remember exactly who it was I was listening to talk about it, a songwriter, talk about put as a creative person, there's constantly threads falling down, and it's about putting yourself in the position where you can catch those threads and turn them into ideas, if that makes sense. For me, it is like threads of inspirational music just falling out the sky at all times, but a lot of the time I'm not actually placed to capture them because of whatever, noise, life, whatever it is. So for me, a huge part of developing my process as an adult and becoming better at it and more prolific at it has been just engineering my life to get it into a place where I'm more prepared to catch those creative threads and being like, wait, hang on, this is important. I've got an idea. Ah, I was supposed to be, you know, going for a walk with my friend or like blah, blah, blah. Ah, what do I do now? You know, and that's obviously just one microcosmic example, but that can be in all sorts of ways. And I think one of the things that I've struggled with in the past is not attaching that import to my creative process enough. So I do miss a lot of these ideas that I have, and then have to do the thing where I'm sitting down and being like, right, come on, I need to write an album. Whereas actual, like with this album, for example, the process did completely change for me in that I didn't need to do hardly any at all of that sitting down and forcing the ideas out, which has been a mainstay of any creative process in my life before that. I've had to have at least a few things where I'm like, come on, I need three more songs for this album, or I need one that sounds like this, and come on, brain, like what must be something inspiring. So it's been a bit of a departure for that, and a development for me, I think, in my process, that I'm just trying to get in that headspace where I'm always ready to jump on an idea if it comes to me. And for me, that means I don't need to sit down and work at it as much. Having said that, it was all of pretty much the whole album has been a 50-50% collaboration between me and Jamie Francis, who plays banjo in my band. Most things I've released, you know, in my kind of back catalogue have been collaborations with him, most of my solo stuff. So we went to uni together, bonded over folk and roots music, and have just been writing and playing together ever since. So there is that big back and forth between us as well.
I love that idea, though. I don't know about you. So for anybody who follows you on social media, they'll know that you love a walk. I love a hike. But I know myself, if I make the time to go out a walk, that's where the ideas come. That's you know, it's the, I don't know, something about the rhythm of the footfall or just the space, or I don't know. It's not, you never have to force the ideas when you're walking. Is that,
totally.
Is that intentional thing?
Massively for me, yeah. I think, you know, obviously the kind of, probably the mental space that it puts you in when you're walking as well. It's just... for me, going for a walk or a run or a swim, whatever it is, I'm sure you're the same. Just getting outside, sometimes it just puts you in that frame of mind where you empty your brain of a lot of excess stuff, I think, that gets in the way of that creativity, maybe. But also for me, it might be just... you know, there can be other just sort of general mundanity type activities that will spark creative ideas for me. So it might just be, I might be like, just go into the city and meet a friend for a drink, or like that sort of thing, or, you know, go and have a cricket training session or whatever it is. It's just something about taking myself out of a space where I'm in and might be trying to force things a bit. I might be sitting in my studio with my guitar, trying to force out an idea. It would be much better in that situation for me to just go take the dog for a walk. So yeah, I think it's quite a few things, but certainly that methodical nature of having some exercise. And obviously there is probably the, you know, science behind releasing endorphins and serotonin and whatever. But for me, I think a lot of it is just that mindful space that it puts you in emptying your brain of clutter.
That's it, because I imagine, you know, obviously I know through John that life as a touring musician can be a noisy life, can't it? I mean, metaphorically as well as actual.
Yep.
And I guess you need those things, right, to bring you back to centre and make you feel like you again.
Yeah.
And I guess all those things, that's when you're opened up to ideas and creativity as well.
Totally. And it's a, you know, it's a familiar space wherever you are, because that's the other thing is, you know, a lot of, that I do, you know, I do struggle with sometimes. You know, I spend half my life in these glorious Premier Inns and Travelodges and stuff like that. And yeah, often it makes you feel uprooted and unsettled in a lot of ways. That's a really common thing for touring musicians. And, you know, just going for a walk is something that you can just, you know, it's a safe thing that you can do wherever you are. It's like a familiar framework to put your mind in. And yeah, just, you know, put yourself in that space where you're getting fresh air, you're outside and exploring and listening to the sounds of nature around you, or traffic, whatever it is. But yeah, I think that's always so important. I know John's the same. He's always, when he's in different places, is always just going off for a walk somewhere, because, you know, it's so important.
Absolutely. When you take that time and you're out walking, what's your, like, I've always got this sort of internal commentary going on, this it's not so much, I wouldn't describe it as a conversation with myself, but it is a sort of, I don't know, maybe like I don't know, just,
you're like narrating your life.
A little bit, it's a bit like Gossip Girl inside my head. What's your inner voice like? What does yours sound like?
Much more high pitched than mine, actually, I think, and much more annoying.
Okay.
I totally get that as well. I think sometimes sometimes it can be about devices as well, but like, you know, I'm sat here now with three screens near me and forget that it's a huge part of my life being distracted by blue screens all the time. I think that's something else about walking, that you're just taking yourself away from all this, you know, the electronics, and just allowing yourself to be a bit more present maybe. But I think that does then put you in a situation where, because I'm the same, if I'm walking, a lot of the time my brain is having this constant dialogue with itself. And I think that's because probably I just don't allow that to happen a lot when I'm in my own space, because I'm always, my brain's always been distracted by something else, whether it's something on a screen or even, you know, positive things as well, like just playing an instrument or reading or whatever it might be, cooking, you know, whatever. So probably when we're out walking, our brains get into that space where, they're just a bit empty of noise, so start making their own noise, and maybe it manifests in that kind of way for both of us.
Okay, moving on then. You know, life can be quite solitary on the road as well, right? So who are the people in your life who make you feel at home?
Yeah, that's a good question. I suppose that changes. You know, I'm fairly recently out of a relationship, so obviously things change when you're by yourself and on your own, and I think that's a, you know, I haven't really had a long period of my adult life just being by myself. So, and I'm quite keen to do that now, just to, because I think you learn a lot more about yourself. But yeah, so obviously that has changed throughout my life, who has been the person that makes me feel at home. That in the past, that has been, you know, my partner. But totally, my siblings, I've got a younger brother and an older sister, and we're very close. I'm very close to both of my parents, and they all totally ground me and make me feel at home. They all live in the place where we all come from, which I do as well now. We all come from Norfolk in the east of England, and we all dispersed all over the world. And my sister moved to America for a while, but now we're all back in a close space, and I totally feel like I have my roots down there, which I don't think I've really felt since my childhood, really. So they make me feel at home and loved and safe. And my puppy is a huge one. I
thought he'd come up.
Yeah. I'm surprised it's taken this long actually for me to talk about him.
You like dogs?
Not true. I want to hear about the dog.
Can't remember what my point was. I think I was just going to say he's really cute and fluffy.
I think everybody needs to hear that.
So insightful.
What we're doing is we're finishing every episode with what we're calling the final sift. So it's four questions we're asking everybody. And so we'll kick into that. So first one is, what's something you've let go of and never looked back?
That's a good question. How long am I allowed to think about it? Can you edit this out?
I can edit this out, of course. I don't even know how I would answer that, to be fair.
I'm just wondering how pretentious to go with the answer.
Oh, go all the way. I know, and it's trying to be honest with it as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I know what I want to say.
Okay.
I know what I want to say, but I just think it's like, it's just kind of lame. And I think it's how most people would answer the question. But
you want to be a bit cooler.
Well, I was just trying to think of something, you know, more interesting in left field, or maybe I could find some loopholes in the wording of the question. But actually, I think the honest answer is, because it has been a big thing in my life, but the most honest answer is just trying to let go of expectation, because... And that can be in all sorts of different ways. It can be what other people expect of me, because I think I've been overly concerned throughout a lot of my life of what other people think of me or expect of me. And that's not to say I don't like to be sensitive to what other people think, but I don't like to let it define what I'm doing, especially creatively. But then also my own expectation, which I think is a big thing. I think partly who I am as a person, but just society in general and maybe our education system, whatever it is, living in a capitalist society, just places so many expectations on you. And this is me talking as a guy as well. I can't even imagine what the dynamic is like being a woman with that. And how I think it just channels people into these kind of grayer, duller versions of themselves through them being overly concerned with what people think of them or what people expect them to behave like. And I just think it is a sort of overarchingly just pretentious thing to say, lowest common denominator thing to say. But I think for me, it has totally transformed and changed my life, just trying to let go of being concerned about what is expected of me and what I should be doing, what I should be like, but also what I expect from my life, because I think I've wasted a lot of time being bogged down by what I expect, how I expect things to happen for me, how I expect things to go, that I've missed out on a lot of good stuff in those moments. So I think trying to actively let go of my own expectations of where my life is going to go, you know, I'm in my 30s now, and it's very freeing for me just let going of the expectation of, oh, I should be able to afford to have my own house by now, or I should be able to do this, I should have a kid, whatever it is, all these expectations that I've placed on myself and other people have placed upon me, just trying to actively make the effort to let go of that, just accept that I am like a, you know, one in 30 trillion miracle or whatever it is, just being alive as a human in this body on this planet, and just what an amazing thing that is. I think that's helped me a lot.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. I love that. That wasn't pretentious.
It is pretentious. I wonder how many other people will say that on your podcast. I just let go of what people, negative thoughts that people have towards me. Live, laugh, love is what I'm saying.
Okay, so second question. What is a question that you keep coming back to in life?
I think the most honest answer I can give to that is what makes me happy, because I think that's something I've been exploring a lot in the past couple of years, especially as I've had, you know, difficult things to contend with in my life through both health reasons and personal life reasons. And I think something I've always naturally gravitated towards is happiness, which is cool. I've realized as an adult that's a good goal to focus on and to go for is what makes you happy. And I think it's only fairly recently that I've started to question that, like, what makes me happy, because there's been time, you know, through COVID and stuff like that, when obviously times were difficult for everybody, but through that and through just natural trajectory of my life, I suppose, there's been a lot of times where I've been like, what, you know, really not enjoying doing music as a job. Basically, I've been in places where I'm like, what, you know, why don't I just get a job that would pay so much more money, which is pretty much any job, and then just do music on the side, so music can just be this love thing that gives me happiness. Like, why don't I just do that? That's what all my mates do. You know, they don't have jobs that they love. It's just it allows you to do the things you love and allows you to be a functioning member of society, I suppose. So, but that has led me to have those internal conversations on a lot of what actually makes me happy. Does you know, the hustle that is involved with doing music as a job, the admin, the reframing of how it all operates in your head, does that make me happy, or should I just do something else and then have that as a, you know, pure source of happiness? So I think that, yeah, that would be my answer, because it is something that's really defined a lot of the biggest decisions I've made in my life. And it's something that I really try to hold to and actually keep. I think I probably won't ever get the answer. I think that's just, you know, it changes as well through your life, what makes you happy, and that's okay as you grow as a person and change as a person. So I think that, yeah, it will always be there, and it's something that I have tried to set as a life goal for myself, is, you know, that pursuing love and happiness, and just trying to hold to those kind of tenets of what things are important for me, and what things aren't. And I think constantly asking myself that question kind of helps me do that, I suppose.
I think that's great. And I think it's great that that is something that keeps coming up. And because, like what you said, that changes, right? So what makes you happy in your early 20s isn't what was going to make you happy in your 30s or your 40s necessarily. So yeah, I think that's a good one to keep asking. I love that. Okay, third one is, who is someone whose values you admire and why?
How political do I go?
Oh, do it.
If I say Jeremy Corbyn, do I get kicked off the podcast?
You do. For sure. Doesn't have to be somebody famous.
Yeah. I think I would go with my dad, to be honest, because I've always had a lot of respect for him as a person. I recognise he's a great dad. He's had a lot of difficult things to contend with in his life, but I think he gave me one of the most valuable lessons in my life, which was just making me realise that toxic masculinity and that whole side of things is something that I just didn't need to, that I could turn away from, and it didn't need to be part of my life. But also, he's just one of those people who's like a, you know, he's a quiet, typical kind of quiet, reticent Norfolk working class man, but also just so calm and respectful. I don't think I've heard him raise his voice once in his life, except when he got out in cricket. but yeah, I think that has just had a huge influence on me as a person, because, you know, he's not perfect. I'm not trying to make him into this paragon, you know, pedestalized paragon, but in terms of just the quiet little frequent lessons that he's given me throughout my life, just through observing his behavior, he's never tried to tell me to do anything. He's never tried to mold me into any way, any shape, which has allowed me to find independence and find creativity, I think. So even though he's not a creative person himself, he's not a musician, we're so different as people, but I think a lot of the core values that have given me the elements of my personality that I think are good and worthwhile now as an adult, I think a lot of that comes from him. So yeah, I'd have to say my dad.
He sounds wonderful. Good. Last one then, Sam. If you had to distill everything down into one thing that really matters to you, what would it be?
Wine. I think, oh man, it's kind of a lame answer again, but it's true. Yeah, for me, it just would have to be love. And that's not necessarily love for another person. But I think for me personally, most of the worthy pursuits in my life have been born of love. And I just think it's one of the coolest and most powerful things we can experience and be a part of as humans. Like that just, you know, unquantifiable love bond with a family member, a friend, a pet, a place, an activity, whatever it is. And I think a lot of people deliberately turn away from love, especially men. But I think a lot of people just, part of that childlike kind of innocence that everybody talks about trying to get back, I think a lot of that is just love. As a child, you just love everything. You're like, oh, I love being alive. I love this tree. I love tapping my hand on this glass. You know, it's that, I think all of that wide-eyed childlike stuff that we try and capture, talk about in a nostalgic way, is just because we loved everything. We loved loved being alive, loved new experiences, and all of the best things that I have in my life at the moment, I think, are kind of born of that just energy of loving something or someone. And I think, again, a bit like the thing with happiness, which, yeah, I'm turning into like one of those mindful well-being podcast guests, but it, for me, it just really is an honest and true answer that I always want to gravitate towards things that I love, and the times where I've been most unhappy in my life are when I've either lost sight of or been blocked from the things that I love. So I think, it's just so important to me that that's, you know, I think it will be a life well spent to have just been gravitating towards things that I love, and just trying to do things that I love, as long as they don't adversely affect anyone else, I guess. I love pulling the wings off live sparrows, for example, is not a thing. If you love that, don't do that. Find something else.
Well, I think that's a gorgeous way to end. Thank you, Sam. So we're going to sign off with a track from your brand new record. Tell me which track you've chosen and why.
Yeah, so Dreamer's Dawn, which is the title track of the album, it's a song I wrote about music festivals specifically, because one of the coolest things that I get to experience in my life is going to music festivals, and I will never lose appreciation of that. I could never, but obviously going through COVID and everything gave everybody an extra appreciation for just being at these kind of magical events, being outside in a field with a bunch of other sort of feral hippie types. And so this song is all about that. It's all about being in a field, listening to your favorite music, wearing your most ridiculous clothes, and doing your most ridiculous dance moves. So yeah,
that's perfect. Thank you, Sam. Really appreciate you taking the time to speak to me.
No problem. Thanks. At all. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Down here as I'm stood in 3 feet of water, still as a stone, with all the dreamers who percolate through the cracks in the yellow brick road. Before you know it, we're all dancing like lunatics, like conjurers with crackling fingertips, music flowing through us like conduits. And oh, if I hold a little piece of your heart tonight, would you stay with me in this place that forever holds mine? By the light of the stars we gather like rise up like Valkyries, a myriad into the dawn, to wage war on conformism monochrome, trailing kaleidoscope colours. And how we show it, I see you running round like a dervish, like electrons spinning round in a circuit. Let us, the new pantheon, run. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Sieve. I hope you enjoyed hearing from Sam Kelly as much as I did. His honesty and talent and deep-rooted sense of connection to story and song really struck a chord. If this conversation moved you or made you think, please do share it with someone else who might need to hear it too. And if you've got a moment, leaving a review or rating really helps us keep sifting for the gold. Next week, I'm joined by the wonderful Kate Latimer, mother, maker and founder of Kate Latimer Country, for a conversation about creativity, land, resilience and living a beautifully considered life. I can't wait to share it with you. Until next time, take care, go gently and keep sifting.